RTI.
Well, here we are, ladies and gentlemen, at the Gadget Show, and we have a very special guest with us, Peter Molyneux. Tell us all about yourself, Peter.
Yeah, hi Lee. I'm a game designer, and I've been designing games. Well, my first real game came out in 1989, and I've been designing games ever since. And what an amazing, incredible job that is.
It appears to be something special. We've got another guest with us as well.
This is my son, Lucas. Yeah.
This is your son, Lucas. Yeah. Hello, Lucas. How are you?
Hey. I'm good. So.
Yeah. Do you design games?
I want to.
Yeah? Do you think you'll be as good as your dad, or do you think you'll be better?
As good as him.
Sorry?
As good as him.
Good as him. That's a good... We'll come back to you in a sec. So you started designing in 1989.
Yeah.
And that was right at the beginning of this industry, really, wasn't it?
Well, it didn't feel like the beginning then. You've got to remember, Lee, that then it was very similar to what it is now. There was a lot of bedroom coders. They weren't releasing on iOS, they weren't releasing on Android, they were releasing on home computers like Amstrad and Commodore 64 and, you know, later on in the Amiga. But it felt very similar to now. So, in a way, it felt like the beginning then, but it also, you know, it's familiar to what it is today.
It sounds good. So what was your first game? Do you remember it?
Well, the very, very first game that I really got published was a game called Populous.
It was called
Populous. Now, at the time when I was making it, you know, it was just me, a computer, a friend of mine called Glenn, a huge pile of cigarettes, a massive pile of pizza boxes, and a few cans of Coke. And we just thought we were doing this mad, crazy game, and it wasn't really like any other game. And then to our utter shock and amazement, it went on to be one of the top five selling games for 10 years, and it sold 4 million copies. But, you know, and in that time, you know, nowadays 4 million copies doesn't sound a lot, but the number of iOS's at that time, that was a lot of copies. But it just goes, I'd say we knew what we were doing. We didn't. We just had this passion for making this one game.
What sort of games were you up against at that time? What other things were around?
Well, you know, this is another interesting thing and another analogy to today, really, is that there were a lot of games that were copies of games. There were a lot of shooters, of rip-offs of Space Invaders. There was a lot of copying going on. And we, mainly because we didn't really know what we were doing, we sat down and did a game which was different, mainly because we didn't know how to do the other games, to be honest with you. And so it came out, and it was a first of a new genre of games called God Games. And it came out and surprised everybody. And that is an inspiration for people today, is if you are working in a small team, even if it's two people or if it's 10 people or whatever, don't just try and copy other games. Just realize is that, you know, people like my son and, you know, consumers, they love different stuff.
As long as
that different stuff isn't an excuse to do something poorly. You can be innovational, but you also have to keep that quality bar high, because quite often there's a lot of smart ideas that are badly implemented, and that can ruin the idea itself.
That's right, absolutely. I couldn't agree more. So from that beginning of that, yes, in your bedroom with the cigarettes and everything else, where did you move on to? How did things progress?
Well, after that, I mean, we grew a team up, and there was this company we had called Bullfrog, and we went on to make four or five games. We made a game called Syndicate, one called Magic Carpet, one called Theme Park. And then the whole company was bought by a big publisher called Electronic Arts. And then we went on to make a couple more games, one called Dungeon Keeper. And then I left and started a new company up, which was called Lionhead.
Right.
And that made Black and White, a game called Black and White, a game called Fable. And then that was sold to Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
And then... carried on making Fables. Then I left Microsoft and I've just started a new company called 22 Cans.
And how's that progressing? What are you doing there?
It's a month old, and it's very scary, because you know, you get used to being inside a big corporation. And so just, you know, 4 weeks in, I've just obsessed about building a great team.
I understand. That's the best thing. That's what you need.
It is. And it's interesting seeing here is that, you know, you can have these crazy ideas as much as you like as a designer, but they're useless without a brilliant team to help execute on those ideas. So my first job is to really find brilliant people. So if anyone out there wants a job and you're brilliant, there's one. We've got one already. Any more? There's two, there's three, right? Job done. We're over and done with. Clive at the back, great. Yeah.
So what advice would you give to the young people here now who are starting out? I know things are different than they were in 1989. Mm. But how do you feel? Because the industry is absolutely burgeoning now, isn't it?
It is. I mean, here's the thing. Is you've got to, I mean, there's some obvious pieces of advice. You've got to make yourself stand out. Now, you can make yourself stand out by going to a brilliant university, by getting a top degree, by doing a fantastic dissertation. That's one way of doing it. You can also make yourself stand out. And for me, this is as important, if more impressive. Show people your passion and your dedication by what you do in your spare time. Don't just, you know, do a course and think, oh, well, that's it, I'm qualified, I'll go out there. Realize that the reason why you're doing the course, work on stuff in your spare time. So when you go and meet someone, whether it be an employee or whether you're trying to find other members to come and work with you as a team, you've got something more than a coursework to show. Because it's all... To make yourself stand out different, it's about that passion. It's about fire inside you because, you know, especially people like me, that's what I look for, is there's a spark in people's eyes. And you ask them this one question, what do you do with your spare time? And if it's, you know, watch films and read books, you think, well, you know, what are you doing? if it is, you know, I've taken this game and I've done a few levels for it, or I've worked, taught myself more programming, I think that's a lot more impressive.
So that's it, really. Yeah, it's a passion more than a job. It's a 24-hour-a-day, 7-day-a-week thing that you think people...
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that there aren't brilliant jobs in the games industry, and I'm not saying that people in those jobs, some of those people, you know, they work from 9 till 5.
Oh, that's right. You can have a bit of spare time.
Yeah, you can have... But, do you remember, for me, anyway, going into the games industry... doing this amazing, incredible thing. You can have an idea, you can work on an idea in a small team of people, and that idea can go out and touch the whole world. Mm. That is insanely cool, man.
Absolutely,
just think of lying in bed one day, thinking of an idea, going with a team of people, programming it, and then that, you know, being played halfway around. What more amazing thing can you do with your life? I think that's pretty cool.
Without giving away any secrets, have you seen anything that's insanely cool here?
Well, to be absolutely honest, we've only just arrived. So,
right.
I mean,
we'll have a wander around.
Yeah,
we're
going to have a wander
see
around.
What we can see,
yeah, for
see
sure.
What we can
absolutely.
See,
yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And you've enjoyed it here. You like it?
I do. It's buzzy. It's nice. I've gone around and seen some of these projects that are being worked on, some impressive work, considering the amount of time there. I'm looking forward to seeing a little bit more later on, and we're going to wander around the show a little bit later.
Excellent. Lucas, you've heard what your dad's had to say. Are you fired up now about the industry and what's going on?
Yes.
You're seeing this as your future too?
Yes.
Excellent. That's really good.
Definitely.
Thank you very much.
RTI.
We have with us now Ken Gaines from City & Guilds. What brought you to the Gadget Show, Ken?
Essentially, I'm here supporting what's actually happening behind the scenes with Train to Game. Train to Game aren't just about coming here and doing competitions. They do a program to develop gaming developers, basically, both in design, art and animation, and the game development itself. And we've worked with them and a team from there to develop a qualification that will support the experience that these young people are getting so that they can actually go out and get a job. It's industry backed, it's very solid, and the important thing for me and for City & Guilds is that we are able to take the experience element and a qualification element that will get them into the industry. Because the problem for many people is, okay, you might be able to design a game, but to what sort of standard? And that's where the qualification comes in. We do have people who've done so-called qualifications in gaming before, but again, they have no experience. And a lot of industries want the combination of the two. So that's why working with Train to Game has been so good, because they bring the two things together.
That's good, because obviously City and Guilds is one of the best qualifications you can have, isn't it?
We like to think so, yes.
That's right. Sorry, carry on.
No, we are one of the leaders in, if not the leader in vocational education. That's where we come from. So the whole drive, and especially for myself, is making sure that whatever we offer, whatever certification we provide, is actually going to lead into something. It's not just a bit of paper you can hang on the wall and go, you know, aren't I clever?
Why Train to Game? How did you become involved with Train to Game?
It came through the fact that one of the other arms that sits within the Train to Game family, that's owned by the same organisation, actually does qualifications with us, I believe, in building and construction and a bit of IT. And they said, look, you know, we do this other program. Please, you know, would you like to come and talk to Myra Smallman from Train to Game, to see if there is something we can do together? And what we've come up with is the first product at level 6 and level 7. So it's quite high. It's sort of university type level of qualification, in order to put a program with a robust assessment criteria behind it.
I understand that. It's interesting you say that it's the equivalent to a university type of qualification. Is it? It's in that sort of ball game.
It's in that level, yeah.
Yeah. But really, the type of people who can be helped by an organisation such as this are people who potentially would never get to university and never realise that kind of qualification.
Absolutely. I mean, the thing is that university tends to lend itself more to people who feel academic and like writing lots of dry stuff in many cases. I mean, there are exceptions, obviously, in the world of fashion and photography, but a lot of that is based on art, history and all of those sorts of things. The nice thing about vocational education at this level is it is about being able to do it. It's about being able to understand what you're doing. And what Train to Game have done is brought together a program that combines the two. So it isn't I could just push nice buttons and make nice pretty pictures on the screen and kill lots of things going through the game. There has to be an element of understanding how that works, why it works, and how you put the whole thing together. And as been seen by the presentations that are being done here today, it's also not just about the game. It's about being able to sell the concept of the game and knowing the market that you're going into. Because you can design something that looks brilliant on screen, but if nobody's going to buy it, or you don't know who's going to buy it, then you've wasted hundreds of hours of programming.
I understand that. And the market that these people are entering into is one of the biggest markets about at the moment, isn't it? It's actually outgrown Hollywood.
Absolutely, and only last week in one of the papers was announced there are 20 new jobs being created up here in Birmingham, funnily enough, one of the gaming studios here. So it is a market that is growing, and the UK and Ireland are the best places to do that.
I think so. I think, as you say, there's been a lot of news, particularly since the government announced the tax breaks for gaming companies, and people are really managing now to open up and expand the businesses.
It's an absolutely great opportunity. I mean, the government, it's about time, and Richard and the Tiger team in lobbying for that have done a great job there. And what it means for us is, with this high-level program, what we can now look at is starting to build on the younger students, the 16-year-olds, the 17-year-olds, and getting them to learn the basics, getting them to understand the concepts of how to put games together so that they can step up into these programs where, as I say, it's not just about, oh look, I could create a nice character, but I know how it works, I can explain how it works, and I can sell it, not just sell myself to a company to employ me, but can sell my game on behalf of that company to the public.
That's right. One interesting point is that apparently Train to Game is the first company you've worked on this basis in the games industry.
Yeah, City and Guilds works with quite a number of companies across a wide range of things, and we do company-specific stuff. But in terms of gaming, Train to Game have been the first people that we've worked with in this area. And as I say, you know, the reason for doing that is when we sat down and talked and Myra presented the program, there was a very solid training program there. There was a very solid method of assessing what the students that are going on this program were going to do. And that appealed to us. We've done a lot of hard work over the last 8 or 9 months in making sure that it fits with all the things we have to do in terms of the regulatory bodies we answer to. But Myra and her team have been up to it, and my colleagues, Janet Watson and Kate Ward, who have been doing the development and assessment work behind the scenes for City and Guilds, have just worked tremendously to give us something we are now very, very confident in putting out there.
So in a nutshell, Trades Again are doing it properly.
That's what
we
believe.
And that's why we're supporting
them. Absolutely.
Excellent. Well, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
RTI. Danny Palmer.
Hey, so, first of all, what brings you here to the Gadget Show Live?
Well, it's been asked to step back by one of your colleagues, stepping back away from the Dupe stand. It's a bit noisy. I'm here with my own product. It's called the Dupe, which I invented. We just walked over to a really quiet area, but now it's gone even louder. So, perhaps you want to go over here?
Yeah, it's much more quieter. I guess the thing with the Gadget Show Live is so loud everywhere.
You never find anywhere quiet. Anyway, yes, I'm here at the Gadget Show, actually live 2012, with my percussion drum called the Dupe. I invented it 7 years ago, and it's in the shape of a cube, and it has four playable sides. And I'm trying to get into schools. I'm trying to get it to the professional market as well. So it's a very simple product. Sounds like a conga, sounds like a bongo, sounds like the cajon, but better, and all in one. So I'm just trying to have a go at something I'm really passionate about.
So what gave you the idea for the YouTube then?
Well, like I say, I've always been a musician. From the age of, well, in 1992, I started playing the sax. But I've always been a percussionist. I think while I've been playing football, it's been lying stagnant. Now I've retired, I'm a little bit older, I'm an old man, I can do what I really want to do, and that's play percussion. I've invented my own percussion instrument, and I'm just trying to get it out to the masses. And as you can see, well, you can't see listening to this, but as you know, there's young people going over to the Dupe, they love it, and they seem to enjoy it, and they smile when they're playing it, and that's what it's all about.
And you say it's successful in schools and with well, people of all ages?
Yeah, of course. You know, it's really simple, you know. With all due respect to what I've invented, it's a box which gives you a lovely sound out of it. You know, I put a microphone inside, you can play it acoustically, you can amplify it. There's a standard model which is mainly for schools, and there's a professional model for the people that have got a very special ear, you know, Courtney Pine, Carl Brazil, those kind of people are all endorsing it. Thomas Lang, one of the best drummers in the world, he's got his own tube with his own logo on it. And yeah, it's all fun. It's hard to explain on the radio, but if I'm allowed to say my website, thedupe.com, www.thedupe.com. Have a look on the website. Yeah, unfortunately, you'll see my ugly face first and foremost, but if you just scan around the Dupe website, you'll know exactly what I'm talking about.
So you see plenty of musicians are using it, you know, for their albums then?
Yeah, well, you know, I've been very fortunate that Courtney Pine, a saxophonist, used it on his last album. Royal Shakespeare Company use it when they're doing all their performances in Stratford, and I was very fortunate to do the NAMM show in LA, in Anaheim, and Stevie Wonder came over and started to play it. You know, I had a jam with Stevie Wonder for 5-10 minutes, and he took one, which was great, and said to me it's going to sound great on the next album, so I'm going to hang on to his every word.
So is the Dupe now also, I guess, is it becoming popular in the football crowds as well, and an instrument played during matches?
I wish.
Is it the new Vuvuzela?
Yeah, well, don't put it in the same, please, not in the same sentence. I think we'd be okay to get into the crowd, you know, because it's quite, it's 9 inches square, 12 inches 15 and 18 inches square, so I suppose you could do, but through security I wouldn't imagine they'd allow it, to be honest, but yeah, it would work. In fact, the England team, actually, you know, the England, the Barmy Army, yeah. They have one, actually, so with the St George's flag on it. So hopefully we'll see it in the stands soon.
And what's the best thing you've heard played on a Dupe?
The best I've played? Well, I played with Stevie Wonder. It's not going to get any bigger than that. I played when Stevie Wonder played. I've got two brothers over there, so it's my two brothers and Stevie Wonder playing the four Dupes. Had a bit of a jam with Stevie Wonder. You can't. If you could ask for somebody to endorse your product, it'd be Stevie Wonder. So he's a genius, and you play the Dupe, man. It's cool.
Well, yeah. So you still keep an eye on the Premiership and all. Who do you think's going to win it this year?
Man United will win it this year.
Easy for them now, yeah.
No, easy's not. No, not easy. No, they'll have to keep their mind on the job. But we shall see. You know, unfortunately, Man City have taken their foot off the gas. A few bad results. Man United haven't. This stage of the season is when it counts, and Man United always come good when it counts.
And we're here with Trained to Game. Are you a gamer at all? You play video games?
No, I don't. I'm not a gamer at all, actually. I'm more music and, well, mainly music, really, than anything else. So, yeah, walking over to the Dupe, as you can hear it.
Do you want to play us out, then?
I'll play you out, no problem at all.
Thanks, Dion.
This is RTI, from the heart of Europe to the world, the station of the stars.
Danny Palmer.
My name is Andy Kett. I'm sales director for Huawei One here at the Gadget Show. And we're showing off the Huawei One branded family of products, which is speaker technology. But it's not normal, it's just like a normal speaker. It's gel audio speaker technology, so it's quite unique.
So what makes it so unique?
What makes it so unique is the driver inside. It's unlike a normal speaker, which is a cone, which reverberates in air. This is the driver in these speakers a gel audio, and there's a speaker that sits in gel. And one of the unique characters about that is because it sits in gel, it uses half the amount of energy, so we get 20 hours playtime out of the standard classic. And also, because it sits in gel, we can use it to transduce, so we can drive the bass into any surface it sits on. So, in effect, when it sits on a surface, it turns that surface into a sub-mini woofer.
So, and it can stick to pretty much any surface then?
Most surfaces, we do have gel pads which help it adhere to vertical surfaces, but it's designed to sit on a horizontal surface like a cabinet. You put it on a cardboard box, a Tupperware container, a table, a side unit, in your bedroom, you know, a side cabinet in your bedroom. It'll use that surface to turn that particular part of furniture into a base.
So it's basically an ideal speaker to take anywhere with you, be you at home, out and about, or music festival, anywhere.
Anyway, you know, these are great as hands-free for in the car. So if you put it on top of your car, it turns the car into a little mini bass. So they're quite unique. There is other technology out there, which is transducing technology, but nothing can deliver the power that this does for the size. This speaker itself is probably about, 15 mil thick by about 120 wide by about 40 mil wide. To get the equivalent bass out of a speaker that's produced by this, you need a speaker that's about the size of a bag of sugar, about a litre in fluid would be the same size produced the bass that this does. So the unique characters about the product as well is it's very pocketable, it's very movable, it's very travel, it's a great travel aid, and also it's a speaker that most speakers out there on the market, you have to physically find somewhere to put in your bag. This you don't, you just pop it in your pocket.
So with it being so small and portable, how difficult was it to develop and cram all that technology in there?
Well, we can make it smaller if we wanted to, and that's the whole idea about the brand of products. We were trying to make things a lot smaller, a lot easier to use, and we're trying to make it so it becomes your media device, such as your iPhone or your BlackBerry or whatever media device you're using at the time, is more appealing and more easily accessible by the accessories that we develop. So it's just one of the accessories in the long line.
So what are the future plans for the product?
Well, we just released at the show, we just announced the release of a Bluetooth version, which goes on sale at the end of the month. And also we're also releasing a visual aid, which is a laser projector, same size as an iPhone. So again, the technology is very small, but it's allowing people to actually use their media player, whatever it is, in any environment. So whether it's a visual or a sound environment, it can easily be used.
And what offers do you have on the product here at the Gadget Show?
Today at the Gadget Show is a great offer. Buy any Huawei Classic, you get 10% off. And if you win and purchase the second one as well, you bought two, you get 10% off both and half price on the second unit. So basically getting it for, you know, the second you're getting for half price.
And for those who unfortunately can't be here at the Gadget Show, where can they go to buy the product?
Well, you can come to here, which is at the Gadget Show. If you can't get to here, then you can buy it at PC World, the mega stores. You can buy it online, because the online will give you all the information about the products at hand. And there are various other outlets that soon be released where you can actually buy the product through the UK.
And where can they go for more information? What's your official website? And do you have a Facebook or Twitter feed people can follow?
Very heavy on Facebook. We have a good Facebook website, very good for social media. But simply go to www.huaweione.com.
Danny Palmer.
So my name is Robert Decker. I work for a company called Leapfrog, and we're an educational entertainment company, originally from the US, but been for almost 10 years now in the UK. We had the Gadget Show now for the second year running, because it's great to go out, meet actual consumers, explain about our products, but also be in an environment where, you know, people like their tech stuff when they come here, but they also care much about consumer experiences and just entertainment. And it's a good environment for us to showcase all the products, take the time, and show really what they can do. Products that we sell sort of fall in three categories. We have our more traditional toys, so pretend play laptops, pretend play phones, plush, etc. Then we have a range of reading products, which are our interactive pens, which interact either with books or maps, and our multimedia devices, which are Leapster Explorer, a handheld gaming device, and our LeapPad, which is a learning tablet, which we launched last year and was the most successful toy in 2011. So that's roughly why we're here.
So how important is the whole interactivity in getting children to learn new things?
We think it's vitally important because learning itself is much more than just doing the core curriculum, if you wish. So it's much more than just reading, math, science. There's so many tech already around children these days. They use their parents' iPads, their parents' iPhones. They see interactive multimedia devices being brought into school. So why not use that, but do it in a way which is suitable for children, really designed from the ground up for children, and something which really teaches them properly from the ground up how to learn to read, how to learn to write, but make it a little bit fun and interactive as well.
And that's what you've got here with the LeapPad Explorer.
Yeah, correct. Yes. So basically, it's a tablet PC, but specifically designed for children in terms of its ruggedness, so you can drop it and it doesn't break. But more importantly, with all the content that's available, it's all around educational entertainment for children from, let's say, 4 to 8, 9 years old.
So how do you go about designing and testing that? Do you bring children into labs to try it out, or is it a case of a science and theory?
It's a bit of both. So it starts with science and theory, but we do have 4 full-time PhDs, educational PhDs, working for us in our headquarters in San Francisco. And they actually, what they do is, once we have prototypes of early versions of devices, they will actually bring loads of children in and let them play with those devices, those prototypes, and see what happens, see how children interact. And from then on, we take the learnings and we fine-tune the devices. So we really try to, first of all, make sure that all the core elements of each applicable curriculum is built into the apps. And then we use actual children to test it and look at their feedback, what they tell us.
And how many different types of games have you got on the devices, and how do you go about deciding which to make? And do you build them yourselves, or are they outside, made from the outside?
Most of the stuff which is on the devices, we build ourselves. And at the moment, there's about 120 games and apps available. And by the end of the year, we're aiming to have 200 available, which is spread really over games, ebooks, but also video content. And what we try to do is a mix of educational entertainment, but also things which are just for fun, as long as it's appropriate. So if you want to use the devices to watch Thomas the Tank Engine of Sesame Street, great. Because there is some educational element in there as well, in terms of social skills, moral, etc., etc.
And are you pushing for these sort of things to be used in sort of preschool and things like that?
It's something which we just started to explore, obviously because of the success we've had in the last 2 years. Schools are very interested in talk to us to see how they can use the devices. We're also working with various charities at the moment to see how they can use the devices in their aim to help children from let's say, more poor areas to learn how to read, or children with learning disabilities. So we're trying to find ways to, without pushing it ourselves too much, to see if we can help people with using this technology.
And are you selling the products here at the Gadget Show as well?
Yes, we do.
Cool. And for those who aren't here, how can they either buy the product or find out more information?
So first of all, the best way to find out information is just to go to our website, leapfrog.co.uk. From that website, you can also find various links to retailers who stock and sell our products, whether it's Toys R Us or Argos or Smiths or Amazon, for instance. But there's more others out there as well.
And so anything else you'd like to add about LeapFrog and the products?
Well, the other thing which I really would like to add to it is that it's although we call it educational entertainment, it's also lots of fun. And it's also built around social experience. So we really also encourage people, when they go into our brand, is have a think about how you can play with it together with your child and really help them explore.
Great. Thanks for your time.